On a Friday, the final Friday of June 2020, it's Idaho Matters on Boise State Public Radio News. Hi, I'm George Prentice. It's time for our reporter roundtable. When you get up to date on all the news that made headlines this past week. Today, our panel includes Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press and the Eye on Boise blog. Erin Bamer is here, also from Idaho Press. She covers Canyon County. And from Boise State Public Radio News, we have James Dawson. Welcome to you all.
Hey, George.
Thanks for having us.
The headline is Governor Little, Idaho to stay in stage four of reopening. And the byline is Betsy Russell. Betsy?
Yes.
Take us to that press conference. A lot of us watched it. It was as interesting as it was frustrating, as it was fascinating. But bottom line, the governor again said, please don't let your guard down, but, quote, we want businesses to open.
Right. And stage four actually allows 100% of Idaho businesses to reopen. Stage four is the final stage in the governor's four-stage reopening plan. So by staying in stage four, we're open statewide with the exception of Ada County, because the governor also announced that we're transitioning to a local and regional rather than statewide approach where additional restrictions are needed. And earlier this week, Central District Health said, we know where it's needed, and it's right here in Ada County. Mm-hmm. So Ada County has gone back to stage three, and not the stage three that we had before, where bars were allowed to open, but the original stage three restrictions, they shut down all the bars, because that was basically seen as where a whole lot of that community spread was occurring, including a rather large cluster. The governor made comments both at that press conference and in his AARP call a day earlier about how disappointed he was that this is not how he hoped things were going to go. I think it was clear that he was hoping after 2 weeks of stage four, we'd basically be ready to lift all restrictions, and we are not there.
We set a statewide record Tuesday. We set another one Wednesday, and we set another one Thursday.
The cases are going up, not down. Infections among healthcare workers are going up, not down. And the percentage of positive tests are going up, not down. There is no way that we would have met the state's criteria to move on to the next stage. I think what a lot of discussion is out there is should we all be moving back? And the governor's answer to that was that at the time he held his press conference, there were still 9 counties that had no community spread. I think that may have changed by now. That number may have dropped a bit, but he doesn't want to impose really sweeping economic restrictions in areas where basically there are no cases. And so that's what this new local and regional approach is aimed at. But it raises some questions. The governor said that mayors and health districts, along with himself and the state health and welfare director, will continue to all have decision-making authority. Well, what if a mayor and a health district disagree on what to do? And we reporters, including James Dawson and myself, quizzed him pretty heavily about this. And he said, you know, if necessary, he will mediate between them and he will break the tie.
And James Dawson, the bottom line, though, is that there are now multiple messages.
Yeah, for sure. especially like Betsy said, when we pressed the governor on this, you know, he said, oh, people should just get along and do what's best for, you know, the people of Idaho. Well, I mean, the Idaho politicians, especially in recent months, have not gotten along. You've had 2 statewide elected officials sue state lawmakers. You've had Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan kind of rebel against some of the phases of the governor's reopening plan, visiting Hardware Brewing in Kendrick before it was allowed to open, but they did it anyway. They just said recently that they would take a fine over being shut down for, I think it was 45 days, by the way. So, you know, it's maybe not unreasonable to think that there will be clashes about this in the future, especially since it's been such a heavily politicized issue, even though it's scientific and health-based and maybe should not be politicized at all in that regard.
I'd like to play a piece of sound from yesterday's press conference when the governor was asked about these different messages. He was asked about Ada County retreating to stage three, and he talked a bit about how folks from counties outside of Ada County might see that and it might, well, scare them straight.
I think the fact that Central District Health took this action, if you're a restaurant person, a bar owner, a bar patron, just the awareness that those opportunities could go away if things got worse. I think that that serves as an example. We're seeing it in other states. I think today, Governor Abbott shut down elective surgery in Texas because of what happened there. These things on a macro basis have consequences, and I believe the people of Idaho don't want those consequences to take place. I hope, I think, and I pray that that's what happens.
And just to update that a bit, the governor of Florida and the governor of Texas have decided to close bars as of today. So, Betsy, indeed, Idahoans, it's not as if, and the governor says this, it's not as if the virus respects borders. That said, we are looking at these other states with great interest.
Absolutely. It's not clear where we're headed with this thing. I mean, at this point, we did not expect to have it going up again. The thought was that by now, things would be receding. There might be a second wave in the fall, and everyone was bracing for that because that would coincide with the flu season and raise questions about hospital capacity impacts. But if it's still going up now, there must be more we need to do. It's interesting to me because last weekend, the Idaho Press published a two-day Road to Recovery special edition that examined how businesses are reopening, how they're doing it, how they're trying to cope with the new normal and observe the restrictions and get open again and start doing business again. And we found lots of businesses all across the Treasure Valley that are working very hard at that. And the level of restrictions at individual businesses vary quite a bit. And if people want to go out to a restaurant or a hair salon or a game store, there are places out there where they can feel safe. If they want to go to a place where restrictions are not being implemented, most people are not wearing masks, maybe there's not as much physical distancing, they can find those too. And if those are the ones they find, we may continue to see what we've been seeing as far as the case.
So speaking of businesses and speaking of borders, let's bring Aaron Bamer in. Aaron, you cover Canyon County, and indeed, Canyon is in a different health district, but you've been reporting that businesses are, well, if they're not flourishing, they're doing their best to stay open.
Right. It's really interesting that as Ada County is scaling back, Canyon County is very much pushing forward in its business reopening plan, particularly downtown Caldwell. Which had a lot of momentum going into this year, had a lot of new businesses open in the past year. Many of those businesses are reopening, and in fact, three new businesses have actually opened within the past 2 months, and more are on the way. And those businesses are saying that activity isn't what it normally is at for this time of year for them. It's typically higher, but it is higher than what they were expecting to see with everything that's going on. And the regulations and the precautions that each business is taking to be safe right now is not consistent very much at all. Some businesses are requiring masks for both employees and any customers that come in, while others are not requiring masks at all. And I think it's important to note that while Canyon County as a whole is not at where Ada County is at as far as the number of new cases, it's not too far off. I just checked the state website, and it is Canyon County has the second highest number of new cases for this week.
They just surpassed
Ada County.
They just surpassed Blaine County, yes.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Well, let's talk about face masks, Jimmy. The governor was asked yesterday about, well, the question that everyone asks. Why don't you issue a mandatory order? This is what he said.
You could do something, but the compliance would be terrible. The mask wearing in Idaho compared to what it was 2 weeks, a month ago, 2 months ago, has gone up astronomically. We got a way to go, but mandatory masks just don't make any sense for a lot of Idaho.
But Jimmy, don't you think this question remains and is maybe elevated with every passing day?
Oh, I think so. And you kind of saw that with the Idaho Statesman editorial board just today, I believe, posting an editorial saying that Governor Little should mandate masks. Even if there's no enforcement behind it, the message would give businesses cover in order to require their customers to wear masks. And, you know, his kind of thinking on this is that, well, it doesn't really make much sense for someone who's maybe in a rural county working outdoors in agriculture or whatever, or even by themselves to wear a mask. But, we asked him, well, what about just in public? And he didn't really answer that part of the question. We've seen statistics from around the country where the states that I believe it's 14, including Idaho, that don't mandate masks in public, all of their numbers are going up with the coronavirus cases, as opposed to those states who have either some restrictions or full restrictions on making their residents wear masks in public.
And Betsy, part of the governor's argument all along is he likes to list the number of counties that have or had not reported COVID-19, but Boise County reported its first COVID-19 case yesterday, as did Boundary County. That list of counties is shrinking.
It is indeed. And just yesterday, also down in Utah, Salt Lake County and Summit County announced mandatory mask wearing rules inside all commercial and retail establishments, and also in crowded outdoor events. So we're certainly seeing more of this happen around the country. It's been interesting to me because I've been listening pretty much each week when the governor has done these hour-long statewide call-ins with the AARP, at which anyone can participate, but lots of seniors especially do. And every week he is asked at least once, if not multiple times, why are you not mandating mask wearing? And this week it was a 73-year-old woman who said, quote, I was told there was a meeting over in Boise with some of the legislators and nobody was wearing masks. I would very much like to know a reason why we're not requiring masks. And the governor gave a very clear answer. He said he strongly encourages Idahoans to wear masks. He said, quote, I'm a big advocate for it. But as you probably know, we're not big on government mandates in Idaho. So for all of the efforts to paint Governor Little through this as some kind of a flaming liberal by his critics on the right, he is not a big advocate of government mandates. And I think that's at the heart of his resistance to any kind of mandatory mask order in Idaho. Although he did say at his press conference that he would consider all options.
And I should add that Clearwater County also reported its first case late yesterday. We have some fresh news, by the way, a notice that just came in the last couple of minutes from Boise State University. Indeed, the university has extended its campus-wide facility closure at least another week through July 5th, adding that they have been notified of approximately 20 additional positive test results, quote, with dozens more still pending. That's a story that will never end, apparently. We are in our reporter roundtable with Betsy Russell of the Idaho Press and Aaron Bamer, also of the Idaho Press. James Dawson is here from Boise State Public Radio News. The headline, homophobic vandalism found at College of Idaho day after Pride March. And the byline is Aaron Bamer. Aaron, tell us what happened on the C of I campus.
Yeah. It can be easy to kind of forget with everything that is going on right now, but it is also Pride Month. And the College of Idaho had a pretty major step earlier this week where students and staff organized the college's first ever Pride March, where people marched through campus and through buildings. And it was described as a pretty great event. And unfortunately, that was kind of taken back a little bit the next day when someone took down several of the Pride flags and spray painted over them and then wrote some homophobic language on the sidewalk of campus, which was quickly taken down. And police are currently investigating the incident. But I think the most disheartening part of reporting on this was talking to several of the students, and none of them were really all that surprised by this response. And I think that that's pretty telling.
As far as the investigation, to officers have any kind of imagery of a possible suspect?
Yes, they actually released a photo of a person of interest yesterday. Or actually that was Wednesday, I'm sorry. But that's as far as they've released publicly. It's a pretty grainy image, but it's available on with the story if you want to look.
And Caldwell police are taking the lead on that investigation, I'm assuming?
Yeah, well, any people with information can contact either the Caldwell Police or the College of Idaho. They're working with the Caldwell Police on this, and they're working with other students and staff on how the college as a whole is going to respond to this further beyond just like legal actions. The one kind of silver lining to all of this is that while a lot of the students were not surprised that this happened, most of them were pretty fired up about it. And I think that this is going to be a push from the college community to be more accepting and be more vocal about their acceptance of the LGBTQA community in Caldwell and on campus.
James Dawson, let's head to the Statehouse for our next story. And that was the self-called or self-proclaimed legislative session that happened this week with 15 House Republicans, but it wasn't a legislative session. What was it?
No, I mean, it was essentially just a meeting. You know, you had, like you said, about 15 lawmakers, I believe, who were on the floor of the House. They did not see, if you've ever been in the State House, for people, just to paint a picture, it's kind of like this horseshoe when you're down on the floors with desks in sort of a rainbow fashion. And then there's a gallery up on top, the floor above it. Well, instead of sitting at their assigned seats, also there were no staff members there, we should say, as far as I could see, they pulled chairs together, really no social distancing, no masks at all. And they just kind of aired grievances over what they thought was an abuse of power and unconstitutional overreach by Governor Brad Little with his stay-at-home order. And, you know, it lasted probably a couple hours or so. I wasn't there. Heath Drusen was there in person, but I was watching for a lot of it. And, you know, really, there was no action taken, obviously, and no action could be taken because it wasn't an official meeting at all.
Betsy Russell, your reporting indicates that there were more than 200 supporters in the gallery.
That's right. Many of them armed. Ammon Bundy had announced beforehand or had told me that his supporters were going to be providing crowd control for this event to ensure that everything was peaceful. There were a lot more supporters up on the fourth floor in the gallery than there were down on the floor, where there were only 15 legislators talking. And there were two groups that really kind of put out the call for this to be a so-called special session of the legislature, despite the fact that the Idaho Constitution says only the governor can call a special session of the legislature. The Idaho Freedom Foundation commissioned a legal opinion by two Arizona attorneys that laid out a theory that one could interpret the COVID-19 virus as a foreign enemy attack on Idaho by China, and therefore we could invoke an obscure section of state law that was enacted during the Cold War for after a nuclear attack, in which the legislature could just call itself into session, and you could throw out the window all the Constitution's requirements for a quorum and everything else. And Ammon Bundy himself told me prior to the session, oh, they don't need a quorum. Whoever shows up, just a majority of them can pass legislation and do whatever they want. Well, that is not how the Attorney General or multiple other Idaho attorneys interpret the law or the Constitution, and considerably lengthier and more detailed legal analyses were published that reached the opposite conclusion. There is an unregistered political action committee called Freedom Man PAC that sent letters to every legislator calling on them to attend this special session, but only this 15 came. And in the end, they didn't buy this argument that was being laid out, that they're empowered to do this despite the law or the Constitution. Representative Judy Boyle from Midvale announced right at the start, quote, this is not a session of the legislature. We do not have a quorum. So they did not think that they could just proclaim themselves to be the entire legislature. picture, despite the urging from these groups.
Is leadership saying anything about this?
Leadership has been quite quiet, but I think it's noticeable that no members of leadership attended. The 15 legislators who took part were all House Republicans. Absolutely no senators participated. And the Senate Republican leadership actually sent out a letter to all members of its caucus decrying this event, saying that they had been talking with both the Freedom Man PAC and the Idaho Freedom Foundation about this and trying to persuade them that this was not the way to go. And that if we want to make changes to our laws or object to what the governor has done, it could be addressed during the regular legislative session in January or by working with the governor and persuading him to call a special session. Now, since then, Wayne Hoffman, president of the Freedom Foundation, who has not returned my calls for my reporting this week on this process, has proclaimed on Facebook that they never talked to him and why he had nothing to do with this other than the legal opinion, but his fingerprints are all over.
Was the highest ranking representative there Judy Boyle then, because she's a committee chair?
Well, she is the chair of the House Agriculture Committee. I mean, no member of leadership attended.
Is it your sense that there might be a repeat of this, or do you think that this was a one and done?
I think it was a one and done. I think that it was an attempt to make a big splash that kind of turned out as a dud because the legislators didn't bite. They didn't essentially launch an insurrection. They didn't try to take over the government or impeach the governor, which Representative Heather Scott from North Idaho has been calling for, that this was a mechanism that would allow the legislature to impeach the governor. And there were even some calling for installing Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan as the new governor as part of this process. And the Senate Republican letter that they sent out was very critical of Lieutenant Governor McGeehan, saying that she had been publicly saying that she would be there to preside over the Senate for this, quote, special session. Well, I asked her for her response, and she sent me a statement saying, oh, they didn't even talk to me. How dare they smear me like that? If the Senate is going to be in session, it's my constitutional duty to preside, period. And that was her comment on that. And no senators showed up, so there was no need for her to do so.
The headline reads, Boise's Concordia Law School to close, and the byline is Aaron Bamer. Aaron, what's happening?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's pretty straightforward. The Concordia Law School in Boise was on a path to transfer to the Concordia Law School St. Paul. And for reasons that couldn't really be specified due to pending legal litigation, the school had to close entirely because the transfer plan, as far as we know, was just deemed no longer viable. And that's pretty much as far as we know. The interim dean said that the Boise Law School had no control over this, and a lot of it was kind of due to the financial distress and closure of the Concordia Law School in Portland. But she said that as of right now, they can't really reveal more details about the reason for the closure, just that they're working with other law schools, including the University of Idaho's law program, to try and figure out ways to allow their current students opportunities to transfer to other law schools right now.
There are so many intriguing parts of your story, including the brief comment from Concordia saying that due to financial distress, the process could not continue. Financial distress.
Right. I mean, that was in reference to what is going on at the Concordia Law School location in Portland, which is closing.
But due to their financial distress, the deal could not be made. That's how I read that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I also gleaned from my talk with the interim dean. But as frustrating as it is right now, as much as I tried to get more details, there really wasn't much that could be shared. So hopefully as time goes on and this litigation or whatever is going on proceeds, we can get more information and find out more about what is happening with this school and what is going to happen to the students. But it's all just very, very murky right now. They couldn't really give concrete answers as to why this plan that seemed to be going just fine. She said that they were on track to complete the transition to the St. Paul location by the end of this month, which is obviously very close. And it just kind of abruptly was stopped. And unfortunately, this law school in Boise now has to close because of it. And we don't really know why yet.
James Dawson, Reclaim Idaho had a pretty good week. Their effort to get a school initiative on the November ballot is not over.
No, yeah, and it kind of seems poised to actually be on the ballot, too. So earlier this month, they filed a lawsuit against the Secretary of State and the governor, claiming that because of them not, you know, allowing them to collect signatures for their petitions online because of the pandemic, they, you know, there are no events. So they can't really go out, especially under the governor's stay-at-home order when it was in its first stages, that actually violated their constitutional rights. And so a federal judge agreed with them this week, saying that because of Reclaim Idaho's past track record in getting the Medicaid expansion ballot initiative through to November 2 years ago, and then also the fact that they had gotten more than half of the signatures they thought needed to qualify, plus a few districts qualified as well, that there was a good chance that they were going to actually get it on the ballot. Whereas the state was like, well, you are allowed 18 months to do this. You only started last fall. You didn't use your entire allotted time, and therefore we shouldn't be held responsible for the way that you chose to conduct your campaign. But the federal judge this week said, you know, the Constitution doesn't preclude procrastination, was a good quote that I got out of that one. And so in
I'm
his
so glad
ruling,
to hear that. Sorry.
Yeah. And in his ruling from the bench, he said that the state now has either the option of putting the initiative on the ballot in November, which we should, by the way, say would increase taxes on the wealthy and corporations to raise what they say is $170 million annually for education. Or the state could allow electronic signature gathering for 40 some days to kind of make up for the time between when they shut down the campaign and the deadline that they had. I just checked the federal court website, and I still do not see the state having entered any choice. By the way, it is 12:39 as we're recording this. Mm-hmm. They have until 5 p.m. But the governor and the secretary of state called this, judicial activism, and that they are going to appeal to the Ninth Circuit. But that doesn't mean that they don't have to still make a choice unless there's some kind of emergency injunction. So we'll see what's going to happen with this.
Betsy, the governor and the secretary of state were rather adamant, saying that they will definitely appeal, or so they said.
They were indeed, but as far as we know, no appeal has yet been filed. And we continue to check, and they have this 5 p.m. deadline today. So I think, you know, the other shoe is about to fall. The other question is whether the Ninth Circuit would be receptive to such an appeal. And when I spoke with the Secretary of State's office, with the Chief Deputy Chad Houck, a couple of days ago, I said, the Ninth Circuit your only option, right? And he said, well, no, there are other options. We're looking at other options. And the only other option I could think of would be to ask the same court to reconsider, which seems even less likely to be successful. So I think we may well know by the end of the day today what is going on with that.
And for the record, they think that they have about half the number of signatures required. It's not as if those signatures have been verified, right?
Yeah, that's so right. They've had a number of signatures verified already, but they have collected more that haven't yet been verified, and they think they have somewhat over half the amount they need. Their progress at this point is ahead of where they were at the same time in their Medicaid expansion initiative. And the interesting thing about this Reclaim Idaho group and how they're gathering petition signatures, is that they're doing with all volunteer signatures. temperature gatherers. Mm-hmm. And so they have this method that they're doing it with volunteers, which is not what has been most successful in Idaho in recent history. Generally, paid signature gatherers have had more success, but they were very successful in 2018. And that measure passed with more than 61% of the vote. Once again, now the state's argument against this lawsuit was, oh, there would be terrible harm if we were forced to change our election process. But the judge said, the harm, the greatest harm, would simply be for something to appear on the ballot and voters would decide. So he wasn't convinced there was a real tangible harm there.
And Jimmy, yeah, I've got just a few seconds left. Reclaim Idaho is not to be underestimated.
No. I mean, again, they have this track record of winning that. Well, I guess not winning, but getting the Medicaid expansion initiative on the ballot. To Betsy's point earlier about whether the Ninth Circuit would take it up, we should say that there's kind of a mixed bag across the country in this, where the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals has temporarily halted electronic signature gathering in Ohio. You've got North Dakota not taking up one of these similar cases, but in Colorado and Arkansas, courts there have determined that electronic signature gathering is A-OK.
We've got to wrap it up there. He is Jimmy Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News. Many thanks to Betsy Russell with the Idaho Press, Aaron Bamer with the Idaho Press. Thank you so very much to you all.
Thanks, George.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I'm George Prentice. You're listening to Idaho Matters.